from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny.
You're the cop. You're Mahatma Gandhi. You're the top. You're Napoleon Brandy.
Just what is it about a Broadway musical song that makes us hum it on the way home from the theater and remember it for decades? We'll talk with longtime theater critic Gerald Nachman about the enduring power of some great Broadway hits. His book, Showstoppers, The Surprising Backstage Stories of Broadway's Most Remarkable Songs, Forum is next, after this.
Of the Derby winner, I'm a toy balloon that faded soon to pop. But a baby, I'm the bottom, you're the top.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. In his new book, Showstoppers, The Surprising Backstage Stories of Broadway's Most Remarkable Songs, critic Gerald Nachman draws on in-depth interviews with icons of musical theater to explore what makes certain songs knock us out and send audiences home humming. These tunes, as he writes, often become a vital part of Americana, firmly lodged in the country's collective memory. And Gerald Nachman joins us in this hour to talk about his favorite hits, his half century as a theater critic, what worries him about today's musicals, and many other things. And I ought to say by way of introduction that this is a book that really not only talks about Showstoppers, but really gives us a lot of backstage dish. I mean, if you're a little bit of a yenta, you'll love this book in terms of what you can find out about people behind the scenes, many of those iconic figures in theater. And Gerald Nachman, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Michael Krasny.
And it is, by the way, a very ambitious book. It starts out with Garrick, something I didn't even know about, Garrick Gaieties, which the Showstopper song was Manhattan back in 1925, all the way to Jersey Boys. And that's an 80-year span.
I know. I had to throw out a lot of good songs that I loved. The first draft was 40,000 words too long, so a lot of stuff got cut.
Well,
good stuff.
But there's good stuff here. There's lots of good stuff here. In fact, let's just talk about what a showstopper is, first of all.
Well, you know, the word causes a lot of confusion because, you know, songs don't stop shows anymore. They did in the 20s and in the 30s. The star would come out, or somebody, a performer would come out, sing a song, and the applause would bring him back. He would do an encore, or she, sometimes two or three encores. And sometimes they would just, if the spirit was upon them, they would sing their hits. That's how Al Jolson's famous line.
Not how they do it anymore. Huh?
No. But that's how Al Jolson's famous line began. You ain't heard nothing yet.
The songs you, some may quibble. I would, in fact, with the songs
go
that
ahead.
You choose as well. We'll
Everybody
get into
does.
That
yes.
As showstoppers. But let me give early on the introduction. You give some examples. Big Spender in Sweet Charity. I Am What I Am in La Cage aux Folles. Doing What Comes Naturally in Annie Get Your Gun. All That Jazz in Chicago. Tomorrow in Annie. Broadway Baby in Follies. Popular and Wicked. Springtime for Hitler in The Producers. That's just a sampling because there are a lot more in this book. It's, like I say, a very ambitious book and a fun book to read. But also, before we even get into the showstoppers, I get into musicals with you. There's a La La Land out now in Hamilton, and musicals are kind of having a comeback in many ways, but there's nothing like it. There's no other art form comparable to it, and it is an American art form.
Yeah, it is. Americans have created probably 98.7 of the world's great musicals. Nobody else knows how to do it, except sometimes the British can do it. They had a little surge of fame with Cats and Phantom, but it's really an American art form, and it's embedded, as you said in the introduction, in our national consciousness, and they're touchstones for a lot of people. They remember where they were when they heard the song, saw the show. And, you know, it's just part of the woodwork now.
It's also very, you point out, complicated, the way opera is complicated. I mean, you got drama, you got musical music, you got storytelling, dance, staging, and yet not universal, pretty much moored here in America.
Yeah, it is. And, well, I make the argument, which everyone hoots, hoots at me for about that. Musicals demand more separate skills than opera. Opera, it's voices and music. Musicals, it's voices, music, lyrics, and dancing. There's not much dancing in opera, and so it's got to all come together, and it's the only art form that does that.
You think it's dissed a little bit compared to opera, or there's an elitism
among,
with opera?
Among opera goers, but I diss opera a little bit. I've tried to get into it, but it hasn't worked. So, but I'm not comparing it to their, you know, apples and oranges.
We're talking to Jerry Nachman. His new book is Showstoppers, A Surprising Backstage Stories of Broadway's Most Remarkable Songs. He's also the author of Right Here on Our Stage Tonight, Ed Sullivan's America, and Seriously Funny, The Rebel Comedians of the 50s and 60s. And as we said in the introduction, there's a lot of interviewing here. He interviewed Celeste Holm and Hal Prince and Marvin Hamlisch and Andrea McCardle and Tommy Tune, who says, Hello, Dolly is the ultimate musical.
Well, it was the ultimate showstopper, actually, and I had a long interview with Jerry Herman, and that's in the book. And he explained why that title song is so explosive. It's set up by an earlier song called "Before the Parade Passes By," so that when Dolly comes into Harmonia Gardens and all the waiters, you know, go crazy, there's a setup for that, and it's been beautifully choreographed and arranged so that it explodes on stage. Herman said if he didn't have the earlier song, Before the Parade Passes By, in which she talks about joining, you know, she's been widowed, she's been in mourning, she's coming back. If he didn't have that before Hello, Dolly, it wouldn't have the same payoff.
It's a setup, really.
Yeah, setup, exactly. Yeah.
And there's also, speaking of setups, well, you get into contemporary shows a bit here, and you say Hairspray, Newsies, Wicked, Book of Mormon, Hamilton, every number is cranked up to showstopper level. And now I'm quoting Tommy Tune again. He says,
yeah,
I think these shows are all overcrowded. When it starts on that high level, what happens to me is that after 20 minutes, the show gets more and more desperate with each coming number because they have to keep it up at that level. I find it exhausting.
I agree completely. And it's good to have him say it because that's what I believe also. But people just say, oh, you're an old curmudgeon. But Tommy Tune is... you know, you listen to him.
Well, we listen to you, too, because you've got a half a century in this business. But you also say as close to a perfect musical as anything for your money, from your vantage point as a critic, is Music Man, which, of course, came about in 1957. And let's go, in fact, to hear what Jerry Nachman feels is the showstopper in Music Man. You Got Trouble.
Trouble.
Oh, trouble,
right here in River City, where the capital T and that rhymes with P and that stands for pool.
We've surely got trouble,
right here in River City.
Right here.
Got to figure out a way to keep the young ones moral after school.
Our children gonna have trouble.
Well, I never thought of of Harold Hill as being like Jim Jones or he's a snake oil salesman and a demagogue. Like
exactly,
you say.
Exactly. And how he tells the people here's why I made that comparison. Harold Hill tells the townspeople of River City that there's a problem in their city that they do not recognize, and here it is, and I'm going to solve it for you. That's what all these demagogues do.
There's also, 76 Trombones would seem to be maybe more of a showstopper.
Well, it is. Well, I don't know. I don't think it is. I think Trouble's a much more interesting song because it really is telling. Trying to make a plot point. 76 Trombones is just a celebration of the band, really.
Well, let's look at some more of these showstoppers that you write about. You're the Top from Anything Goes, Ethel Merman. There are no more lyrics, she said, because you just keep going with those lyrics. This is what we call a list song, and let's hear a bit of it.
You're sublime. You're a turkey dinner. You're the time of the Derby winner. I'm a toy balloon that faded soon to pop. But a baby, I'm the bottom, you're the top.
Now that goes back to 1934.
Yeah. There's about 25 stanzas to that song that I'd never heard before. So it goes on and on. People used to send Cole Porter their own versions of that. You know, the top.
They kind of top each other, basically.
Yeah, well, people would sit around. It became a party game. People would sit around at parties trying to think up lyrics to You're the Top.
So at one point, Ethel Merman kept coming on doing more lyrics, and then she said, I don't have any more lyrics. You're right about that. You also write about Cole Porter saying, I do lyrics the way I do a crossword puzzle, which I thought was kind of fascinating.
Yeah, I don't remember the quote exactly, but he had a system. He laid it out. He knew where he was going. He knew it, as all lyricists do. He knew what the punchline was going to be, so he worked his way back, you know.
I want to hear another one. This goes back to 1966 from one of the more famous musicals, Cabaret, and Jerry Nachman's showstopper again. Not necessarily Michael Krasny's from Cabaret, but...
What?
Well, this is kind of a show starter to me, but let's hear a little bit of Bill Kerman.
Okay, I'll explain.
Willkommen, bienvenue, welcome. Im Cabaret, oh Cabaret, du Cabaret. Meine Damen und Herren, Mesdames et Messieurs, Ladies and Gentlemen, Guten Abend, Bonsoir, Good Evening. Wie geht's? Comment ça va? Do you feel good? Ich bin euer Conferencier, je suis votre compère. I am your host und sage willkommen, bienvenue.
Opens everything up, like you say, the mood and everybody.
Well, I got into trouble when I started because I wanted to. A lot of what I call showstoppers are show starters,
yeah,
as you said, but I wanted to talk about them, so I kind of shoehorned them in. So the first part of the book is called Just for Openers. But that song would stop the show anywhere in the show, I think. It's just a great, it lifts that show off the ground.
Well, you also, with that show, you write about the rather oozing sexuality. I'm using my own word here, but, you know, that comes out and everything is kind of dark. It's right at
decadent,
that time. But then, you know, a lot of these showstoppers and a lot of these songs are really time-bound in terms of their sexuality. A classic example of that is Shall We Dance from The King and I.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, talk about that. I mean, just
that's,
how it's...
That's one of my favorite. Muted. That's one of my favorite numbers because it comes out of nowhere, really. The show is full of these dreamy ballads, you know, and suddenly, and there's kind of tension between the king and Anna, and it doesn't really manifest itself until she starts talking about how Westerners dance. It's a tradition, and they start to do this polka, of all things, in Siam. So it comes out of nowhere, and it's just to see, it warms her up. It warms him up, and it's a very sexy, the subtext is very sexual in a way, because she said, well, I don't remember the lyrics, but it's about how, it's a courtship ritual.
You say they're not aware of their feelings, but we are.
Yeah. Yes, right. We are, and we want them to get together, and this does it in a way, even though they don't have any kind of a romantic relationship. They both have an attraction for each other. It's a wonderful song. It's very, very subtle.
Should we hear a little bit of it? From The King and I, Shall We Dance?
We've just been introduced. I do not know you well. But when the music started, something drew me to your side. So many men and girls are in each other's arms. It made me think we might be similarly occupied. Shall we dance on a bright cloud of music? Shall we fly? Shall we dance? Shall we then say goodnight and mean goodbye? Or perchance,
talking with Gerald Nachman, former San Francisco Chronicle critic and columnist, also was a columnist for the New York Daily News, and now has a book called Showstoppers, The Surprising Backstage Stories of Broadway's Most Remarkable Songs. And I've been teasing a little bit with the fact that there are some real backstage stories, which I want to get to with you, but also not necessarily to carry on the sexual motif too much, but I was thinking about, you know, how these songs are time-locked in that way. Like, you write about South Pacific, and these guys, as the lyrics show, are kind of sex-starved, but, you know, they can't come out and show
There's
those.
Nothing like a dame, you mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of It's honest. It's funny, and it says what you know, it tells you what's on his mind without being you know risque or dirty or anything. He manages to do it. Oscar Hammerstein was not known as a comic lyricist, mostly for his ballads and inspirational tunes. But in Shall We Dance, a great example of how of his deafness when I think that's Gertrude Lawrence singing. She says, "We might be similarly occupied."
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a great phrase.
It's also when I think of. Let me just get back to South Pacific with you because it's the only major, as you point out, musical set in wartime that we I think have in the canon, and it's also a lot of focus on bigotry, which caused a good deal of political tensions in the South, in particular. But it's also an embarrassment. I think you use the phrase an embarrassment of riches. You got at least six of the seven songs that are classics.
Yeah, it's one that there's about four or five songs, four or five shows that have one after the other. And sometimes they're in the first act. Annie Get Your Gun has six or eight now would be considered standards, and South Pacific as well.
And let's talk about some of that backstage stuff. I was struck particularly, well, the rehearsal trauma of My Fair Lady.
Oh, yeah, where Rex Harrison was not keen on Julie Andrews, who had a hard time getting the Cockney flower girl down pat. And he said, "I'm not going to stand on this stage with her. If she's not gone, if that bitch is not gone, I'm leaving the show."
Those were the exact words.
Well, something like that. Very close. He was a nasty guy. And he was also very nervous because he'd never done a musical. And as we know, he did this kind of talk singing, Singspiel. And he was very nervous. So he was kind of on edge about his own performance. And he didn't want to do the first night of previews. He said, I'm not ready. And his agent came over and dragged him out of the dressing room and says, "If you don't do the show, you'll never work again."
So The Rain in Spain for you is a showstopper from My Fair
Lady. Oh, for sure. You don't think so?
Well, let me find out why.
Well, because again, like Shall We Dance, it kind of comes out of nowhere. There's been all these very, very ornate and witty and lyrics to the other songs, which are all come out of the why can't a woman be more like a man, and why can't the English teach their children how to speak, and suddenly Eliza has finally learned how to speak proper English, and so they're in their study, and these two guys who are very kind of buttoned up, uptight guys, Colonel Pickering and Henry Higgins, she's got it, by George. And then they sing The Rain in Spain.
I want you to know we were recording before we went on the air, and we had to do it a few times, and I said, "We've got it, by George, we've got it." I mean, you do remember those kind of lyrics.
A lot of people use that phrase, by George, he's got it, she's got it. They don't know the derivation.
Well, it was fascinating also to read that Hammerstein didn't think they could do this because, how do you top Pygmalion by George Bernard Shaw? And eventually it's almost as if it became a Shavian musical or got Shaw involved in an integral way in it. By the way, the showstopper for Gerald Nachman's point of view in South Pacific is Some Enchanted Evening. Let's hear The Rain in Spain.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
I think she's got it. I think she's got it.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
By George, she's got it. By George, she's got it. Now once again, where does it rain?
On the plain.
And where's that soggy plain?
In Spain, in Spain.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the
You've also got Get Me to the Church on Time here. Right? Also Julie Andrews.
That's more of a traditional showstopper.
Yeah.
What did you ask?
No, I'm just saying in some instances you've got a couple of songs that are showstoppers.
Yeah, some shows have only one. Some have two. Some have three. As I say, Annie Get Your Gun and South Pacific have four or five. My original idea was to limit it to one song per show, but I couldn't ignore some of them.
Well, some, you know, I'm thinking when I'm hearing Rain in Spain, it's just kind of the onomatopoeia of it. You know, it's the rhythm, it's the cadence of it and so forth. And sometimes that makes a difference. I think it does, for example, in another showstopper that you spend a good deal of time with, enlightening us about, from Fiddler on the Roof, If I Were a Rich Man. And let's hear some of that. This is number 12.
If I were a rich man, all day long I'd biddy biddy bum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard. If I were a biddy biddy rich, I'd a diddle 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 man. I see my wife, my Goldie, looking like a rich man's wife with a proper double chin, supervising meals to our heart's delight. I see her putting on airs and strutting like a peacock. Oh, what a happy mood she's in, screaming at the servants day and night.
Well, I'm going to read from Jerry's book here. Jerry Nachman says, the song is almost a chant, sung to a foot-stomping, klezmer-like tune, with only a few simple buried rhymes, richly embroidered in Harnick's, that is Sheldon Harnick, flavorful nonsense sounds, biddy, biddy, bum, diddle, diddle, digga, digga, diddle, diddle, diddle. And Bach and Harnick make the song sound extemporaneous, like an authentic Yiddish folk song, when, of course, it's a carefully crafted Broadway song and became an instant showstopper.
Yeah. Well, I go into some detail about how they came to write that song. I don't have time now, but...
You don't, because we're coming up on a break.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Thank you.
But maybe a quick response from you in terms of how that song came into being?
Well, Sheldon Harnick didn't think he could write the little bitty-bitty-bum chanting songs, but Zero Mostel knew that, because he came from a very orthodox background. So he just improvised that, and that's what it became.
Yeah, these backstories are wonderful. And by the way, talking about backstories, some of you may have some backstories about Broadway show tunes, but some of you may also have some selections of great showstoppers. That's what we're talking about with Gerald Nachman, and we do welcome your involvement in the program and invite you to join us now by phone. Our toll-free number is available to you. The number is 866-733-6786. We're also talking about this American genre of the musical, which is in so many ways a part of America, its warp and its woof. Toll-free, you can join us now at 866-733-6786. And you can also join us by going to our Facebook page or emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum, or tweeting us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. But we do invite you to be part of the program. Questions, comments about the great American musicals, about the great showstoppers. I'd like to hear your thoughts, any questions or comments, or selections. Join us now. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're spending the hour with Gerald Nachman, formerly with the San Francisco Chronicle as a critic and columnist, and now author of a number of books, and the newest one is called Showstoppers, The Surprising Backstage Stories of Broadway's Most Remarkable Songs. And here's Carol, who writes, as a child, I memorized the lyrics of all the songs in The Music Man and have long thought it the iconic American musical. It's a metaphor for marketing, advertising, and self-promotion that we do like no other nation. I was thrilled to see Hugh Jackman do Rock Island when he hosted the Tonys and turn it into a rap song with LL Cool J. I dream of a new film version of The Music Man with Jackman. He's the perfect Harold Hill. You agree, Jerry?
Who?
Hugh Jackman.
Oh, well, I saw him in Oklahoma. He might be good in that, yeah. I saw the original Harold Hill, Preston. Yeah. Such an amazing moment, such energy, and nonstop for 2 hours.
Oklahoma, your showstopper? It's not the opening, because the opening kind of stops the show.
No,
really.
No. The showstopper is I'm Just a Girl Who Can't Say No. Yeah. And that's
a sexual song, too.
Yeah, very sexy if you deconstruct it. The whole point of the book was a way to talk about these, to really get inside these songs, how they were written, what propelled them, why they landed, why they were just so popular, and why they bring us back to these shows. Because these are the songs, you know, when you say Oklahoma, you might think of another song, but you might also think of I Can't Say No, because it's a delightful moment.
I knew you'd get some pushback on this, by the way. Pam writes, I beg to differ with your guest. Opera isn't simply music and singing. It involves complicated stagecraft and acting, with perhaps the only exception being some Germanic operas, lots of movement and occasionally some dance. Carmen?
I agree with that, but I just think the addition of lyrics and dancing is what makes musicals superior to me, but I'm a kind of a reverse snob, I guess.
And Natalie says, what's going on with the opera theater? It seems the genre is in decline. Is it the lack of arts education or creative teams missing the mark? New musicals seem to be much less tuneful, more speechy, and more intense singing than feels like shouting.
Exactly. That's what you were just alluding to. It's because every number wants to be a showstopper. And so therefore nothing is.
Well, that brings me to Wicked. Us to Wicked for the moment here. And we're going to hear the showstopper Defying Gravity. But let me first get behind the song here with what you write. Wicked has a real story buried under all of its hokey special effects, but it's hard to find and almost as hard to care much about unless you're a 15-year-old girl with identity problems. Now, that sounds kind of harsh on the face of it, but I found it difficult to identify with the story there, too.
Well, 15-year-old girls have go back to it again and again and again. So it speaks to somebody, not necessarily me or, I guess, you.
But what about Defying Gravity? I mean, is that a showstopper for you? And
oh,
why?
It is, for sure. It is. I just don't like it very much. It's because it's all bells and whistles to me, and just smoke and mirrors, as I say.
I can hear the curmudgeon shouting that word here.
Well, these are the shows that I grew up with and that you grew up with. I admit that. And why did I choose these? Well, I think I say in the introduction, it's my book, so I get to choose.
Well, let's hear Gravity.
You can argue. I like the arguments.
A little bit from Gravity, from Wicked.
Something has changed within me. Something is not the same. I'm through with playing by the rules of someone else's game. Too late for second guessing. Too late to go back to sleep. It's time to trust my instincts. Close my eyes and leap. It's time to try to find. Can't pull me down.
Can't I make you understand? You're having delusions of grandeur.
All right. Again, we're talking to Gerald Nachman about showstoppers, Broadway show tunes in general, and the great music that has mostly emanated from these shores. Let me go to your calls next, and let's begin with you, Dan. You're on the air.
Hi, good day. Disney movies, I think, are pretty good examples of modern-day musicals, and I think they're pretty good. I do agree.
Which one's a caller?
Hello?
Yeah, he wants to. Which musicals are you mentioning?
Disney.
Disney, yeah. Yeah, you're right. Yes.
One of the problems, though, Toy Story 3 is a good example. Toy Story 2, these, I think, are mature for adults. Shrek, the same way. Not too much music in Shrek, but the idea is you're hitting many levels. I do agree, though, that maybe because music education has decreased, when I was a kid, I would go see the adult, you know, musicals and appreciate them as a child would. And then as I grew up, I understood there was more going on.
Exactly.
There's a bit of that now, but it seems like we have a bit of a, you know, stuck in maybe the teenage years. You don't see fully adult themes as much. But nevertheless, I think Disney's doing a pretty good job in many ways.
Yeah, they're sort of carrying on the tradition in a way. You know, what's interesting is a lot of these shows are of our generation, and yet they are consistently done in high schools. You know, Oklahoma, East, South Pacific, they're still done, and in community theater. So they're going to last a lot longer than Wicked, which takes $1 million of special effects. You won't see Wicked or Book of Mormon at the community theater next door.
And let me thank Dan for the call and go right to another caller, and that's Julia. Julia, you're on.
Yes,
welcome.
Thank you. I saw most of these plays on Broadway. It's so exciting to hear this. But I would like to put a pitch in for Sutton Foster. Oh, I just think she's wonderful. And I have on YouTube the Anything Goes rehearsal. It's better than the one they did at Tony.
Uh-huh.
And it's so good. And I went to see her in person here. She was here for only one night. And I would have paid another $120 to see her again the next night, but she went. And now she's in. She's going to be in Cincinnati, Ohio, which is only one of two places she's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I just bought tickets for my college roommate to go see her in Cincinnati at much less price. But anyhow, do you have any comments on Sutton Foster?
Well, she's very good. She was great in Anything Goes. That was a revival of about 10 years ago, I think. And it made her name. And she was just a delightful and glittering new face, you know, a great dancer, and not a beauty necessarily, but just could put it across.
And thank you for that. Julia, good to hear from you. You can join us at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum. Here's Michael, who writes, have you talked about Porgy and Bess? I know it's generally considered a folk opera, but in fact, it is a thoroughly American musical, and Summertime is one of the most beautiful songs ever. Then, of course, there is the incredible West Side Story, which not only gave us the sublime Maria, but also the hilarious Officer Krupke, classic Americana.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. Porgy and Bess was not in the book.
West Side Story is.
But West Side Story is, and the two songs from that I talk about are G. Officer Krupke and America, both major showstoppers.
And also, West Side Story has Officer Krupke, this listener mentioned, or in a comment and so forth. It's also a major showstopper.
Oh, yeah, I said it. It's a great and a brilliant lyric, and it makes fun of the whole social service network at the time. And that's like 40 years ago.
You talk about the producers, and you write that it really changed them. It saved the musical. I mean, because it went back to the Catskills and used a lot of that kind of.
Yeah, it was old fashioned, and it had Mel Brooks' raunchy exuberance, and you know, it had a lot. And the New Yorkers went bananas because they thought it was the return of the American musical, which had been sort of hijacked by the British.
I wanted to hear another Jerry Nachman named showstopper here, and that's from Guys and Dolls. Let's talk about it first. Adelaide's Lament. Why is it a showstopper?
Well, it's a showstopper of showstoppers because it's a great character song, and it explains her frame of mind. So it advances the plot, and tells you, and it gets in more depth of her character.
Let's hear.
In other words, just from wondering whether the wedding is on a roof, a person can develop a cough. You can feed her all day with the vitamin A and the bromo fizz, but the medicine never gets anywhere near where the trouble is. If she's getting a kind of a name for herself and the name ain't his, a person can develop a cough. And furthermore, just from stalling and stalling and stalling the wedding trip, a person can develop la grip.
All right. We're hearing some of the Showstoppers songs that Gerald Nachman writes about in his new book, and the new book is... Well, let me read a comment about it from Ken Bloom, the author of Broadway Musicals, the 101 Greatest Shows of All Time. He says, whether you don't know a lot about musical comedy or think you know it all, Gerald Nachman Showstoppers has multiple insights, canny observations, and is a lot of fun. And let me go to more of your calls. Let me go next to Neil. Neil, you're on.
Yeah, I was going to ask about Guys and Dolls, but you kind of answered my question. What about Gypsy? Did you like that at all? Where does that
fit? Yeah, Gypsy has three songs, maybe four. What are they? Everything's Coming Up Roses, of course. Mama's Song, Mama's Turn, and Some People.
What about You Gotta Have a Gimmick?
Yeah, that's mentioned too, yeah.
But not a showstopper.
Oh, yeah, that's the showstopper.
Oh, I was going to say, I thought it was the showstopper.
Yeah, it's a great song. The thing I like about Adelaide's Lament is that it mixes... You know, clinical jargon with showgirl slang in a very a very clever way, and it's kind of performer proof. I've never seen it done badly.
Did you like Oliver at all?
Oh yeah, very much. I loved it. It was on TV the other night.
Oh, okay.
Neil, thank you for the call. Another listener wants to know if you can talk about Camelot. I don't know what he wants you to talk about.
Well, it's not one of my. It's on the B list, sort of. It's not. There are some delightful songs in there, like "Why." I wonder what the king is doing tonight, and you know they're lovely songs and they're clever Alan J. Lerner lyrics, and they're good music, but nothing that really takes your head off.
Can you give us a little more of what you love to narrate here in terms of the backstage stories and the
the
dish,
yeah, every
the
entry,
dirt.
Yeah, every show has a section in the book I call Backstage Dish, and it's about the clash of creative egos. And there's a lot of it, and there's a lot of backstabbing and bloodletting, and you know, there's a lot of temperament involved.
What comes to mind instantly, though, in that sense, that maybe even you were shocked by?
Well, let's see. Yeah, in the original, during rehearsals of Chicago, Bob Fosse decided to have a scene of the couple screwing on the courthouse stairs. This is the kind of stuff we don't know about and that you don't want to know about. But I got a good quote here from a friend of mine who read the book and said, "It's amazing to me how often people who were so often temperamental, selfish, troubled, and neurotic created things that were beautiful time after time."
It's a great quote.
That is a great quote.
More of your calls. Let me go next to Jimmy. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm wondering, in the history of musical theater, like all the way going back to Cole Porter, because he had some pretty risque lyrics, if there were times that they had to do the regular productions for adult theater audiences, and then if they also had to do like a children's production where they have to like kind of change or modify the production. Like the author J.A. Dratz is creating a new musical called Ruby the Red Bat, and he wants to do two different versions. He wants to do an evening version, which is like a hard rock kind of really intense show, and then he wants to do like a kids version where you could have a matinee where children could go. And is that something that's ever happened?
I don't think so. But I'll tell you something about about You're the Top. I mean, not about You're the Top. Let's Do It, Cole Porter's song. That was his first big hit, I think. That he had to add in parentheses, "Let's fall in love." So it got by the censors.
And they were zealous in those days.
Oh, very, anything goes now.
Thank you, Jimmy. I'm afraid so. listener comments, thank you for this fun topic. Shout out to my all-time favorite musical, Oliver, and the numbers Consider Yourself, I Do Anything, and Pa Pa. And a question from a listener wants to know, can you please talk some more about You've Got to Be Carefully Taught from South Pacific?
Well, that sometimes some people think it's preachy. I think it's a very good song. It may be a little bit preachy, but it makes a very valid point, a great point, really.
Against bigotry, really.
Well, yeah. And it was very brave of Hammerstein to write that, and he got a lot of heat for it, and Southern theater groups wouldn't do the show because of that. And I get into all that. It's a good song, and it's got some very acerbic lyrics.
There's a line from Will Friedland, who did the biography of the American's most popular songs, about Gerald Nachman's book. Showstoppers is like a great Broadway season, hit after hit, with nary a flop in sight. Boy,
thank you.
About as good as it gets for an author, right?
No kidding, yeah.
Yeah, and here's another caller, Judy, joining us from San Jose. Welcome, Judy.
Hi. I haven't heard everything that you've said today, but the musical that I haven't heard mentioned, which I just love, is Man of La Mancha.
Yeah, I go into that. That's one. Yeah, there's the third section of the book is called Broadway Anthems. Oh, Say Can You Hear? And I mentioned some of the songs like those, the anthems of which The Impossible Dream certainly qualifies. And it's not a favorite song of mine, and I'm not crazy about it, but it definitely stopped the show. It's the only song from that show that anybody ever heard of. Except you, maybe.
Well, I never heard of list songs until I read what you had to say about You're the Top, but I also never heard of touch songs.
Touch songs. What
touch
are
songs. Isn't that what you write about touch songs? Like when they're not necessarily being tactile with one another, but the implication is that they're going to be touching. And
oh, yeah. Well, like Shall We Dance, I guess is a good example. Yeah. I forgot that. I mentioned it. Yeah.
I'm renewing your material here for you. Yeah.
Can I go back one moment? Because you earlier in the show, you talked about what is a showstopper.
Yeah.
And you and I obviously have some disagreements, and everybody does. So this is from Ben Brantley, the New York Times theater critic, who said, quote, a showstopper is a moment of performance so rousingly expert and energizing that the audience response, usually rapturous applause and noises that sound like bravo, freezes the show in a moment of loud pagan worship. Which right. I think that says it all.
Wow, much. Pagan worship.
Well,
sounds a bit hyperbolic to this man.
Musical fiends do tend to be... have a lot of pagan worship in.
Well, let me go to another caller who joins us. Jack, you're on. Welcome.
Yes, good morning to you both. I was just curious to know if there is a CD that accompanies the book that has these samples from the different songs.
Great idea, and I wish you'd write the publisher and tell them to do that in a second edition. It's very expensive, and getting permissions is a major headache. So it can't be done. If this edition should be a huge bestseller, they might go back and do that, but it's very hard to bring it about. It's costly, and, you know, it's just prohibitive.
Well, thank you for the call, Jack. We've been talking a lot about the need to censor and how some of these shows are time-bound with sexual mores not being, shall we say, so unmoored and unloosened as they have become. And I alluded to I Can't Say No from Oklahoma, and that's one of the showstoppers for you, and also one of the songs that really exemplifies what we're talking about here. I mean, the suggestion, as we said before, pretty strong, like the erotic spark in The King and I and the Shall We Dance? Although you have Some Enchanted Evening in The King and I, too, right?
No, that's in South Pacific.
I mean, in South Pacific, too. What? There's something else in The King and I. What is it?
The King and I.
Well, we'll get to that. I wanted to hear, though.
Well, Shall We Dance?
Yeah, Shall We Dance?
Yeah.
No, I thought there was another one in addition.
No, that's all.
That's
Shall We Dance is the only number.
Yeah, we're going to play I Can't Say No, number six.
I'm just a girl who can't say no. I'm in a terrible fix. I always say, come on, let's go. Just when I ought to say mix. When a person tries to kiss a girl, I know she ought to give his face a smack. But as soon as someone kisses me, I somehow sort of want to kiss him back. I'm just a fool.
Ah, so innocent. But
well,
no, let's talk about women in these musicals. That's from Oklahoma, and that goes back to 1943. 43, yeah. But the idea, you know, Irene was just mentioning, you know, like damsels in distress. You had all of these situations with, or, you know, the woman who worked in the office and got to the boss and wound up the boss's wife. And, I mean, they were almost archetypes.
Yeah. Well, Can't Say No is, there's more going on there than meets the ear, let's say. If you look into the lyrics and kind of talk about, she says, I'm in a, with her without the mistletoe, I'm in a holiday mood. I mean, it's just a lot of great phrases, and it's really about a young girl being honest about her sexual feelings. And that, in 1943, that was kind of not done very much on stage, let alone 1906 Oklahoma. So it's really a libidinous song, and it's got a lot to say about young girls' sexual urges.
And now we have, of course, you know, strong, independent, sexual women. That's the trajectory, isn't it?
Well, eventually, yeah.
Let me read some comments from listeners. Joe writes, how about Grant Avenue from the Flower Drum Song? A great San Francisco song. I hum it every time I cross Grant Avenue.
It is a good song, but it didn't make the cut, you know?
And
there's a lot, as I say, I could do another volume, but I'm not going to, full of the songs that didn't make this edition.
Jerry wants to know if you consider Gilbert and Sullivan's works to be musical, and if not, why not?
Oh, definitely. I just went to see HMS Pinafore the other night. Yeah, they started the whole tradition. It's not what we think of as musical comedy, but it definitely is the roots of all the of all the shows today. It's satirical, it's clever, it's engaging, all that stuff.
And Tyler writes, could your guests go further into some of the backstage drama? Elaine Stritch's solo show, Live at Liberty, goes into great detail about her experiences in the theater. How much of that is applicable to other stars? Are there other stars that were particularly difficult or overly dramatic to work with?
Most of them. No, there's a whole history of stars are going to be stars, and most of them can cause a lot of trouble. I go into detail about how Zero Mostel so shticked up the Fiddler on the Roof that it drove the writers and the director crazy, and they were so glad when he left the show, even though the audience loved it. You know, so it's hard to say. If it's selling out, it's hard to tell a star, don't do that.
I want to put a Valentine in here, if I could, for somebody who is local and a friend of mine by the name of Rita Moreno, who just celebrated her 85th birthday. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're talking about the roles of women. The roles were even more difficult for people of color. I mean, she's Puerto Rican by descent. Yeah, yeah. And the difficulty of...
I talked to Cheetah Rivera, who originated the part.
Who Rita used to say, I always get confused with Cheetah. People confuse me with Cheetah Rivera.
Everybody does, yeah. They don't know which one did the movie and which one did the stage show.
But go ahead with what you were talking about with Cheetah Rivera. I mean, what came out of that discussion?
Well, I just want to know how America was put together, and all the people, the famous people she was dealing with, which is Leonard Bernstein, Arthur Lawrence, and Sondheim.
It's all West Side Story.
And Jerome Robbins.
Yeah,
and Jerome Robbins, who was the most difficult man I encountered in all my research. But all choreographers seem to be tyrannical guys.
What was so difficult about Robbins among all those tyrants? Why was he so bad?
Well, he would insult them in rehearsal if they weren't doing something right. I mean, that's just unheard of. And he had no qualms about doing that. And
humiliate, too, I think, huh?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, not just insult, yeah.
Yeah, 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 humiliation, yeah.
Yeah. So we're talking about, in many instances, some real bad guys, aren't we?
Well, Fosse was difficult. Fosse was a pain in the neck because a lot of people didn't like him to work with him. But a lot of people say, I'd work for him in a minute, even though they went through hell. If the show goes on and it's a big hit, you'd be surprised how feelings are tamped down.
There's a listener named Martha who says, Dream Girls, the first song after the intermission. When I was at the Broadway presentation, everybody stood and cheered. Definitely a showstopper.
You mean that long title, which I never can remember?
Yeah.
And I am not... I'm telling you, I'm not going, or something like that. I've never seen Dream Girls, actually.
Well, I saw it, and I confess I was disappointed because I thought it was going to be Motown music of all those Motown groups I love. But
it isn't? I thought it was.
Well, it's music written in that spirit
in that style,
vein.
Not the original songs.
Not the original songs, no. Are there songs, and Leather Listener writes, that have become showstoppers that the cast and creators of the musical never expected?
That's a very good question, and I wish I could think of one or two off the top of my head. I can't right now, but there are
surprises in here, weren't there?
Well,
you're right about Streisand, for example. I mean, Funny Girl was really a vehicle for her to be a star more
absolutely.
Than it was anything
yeah,
else.
Yeah, yeah.
And everybody thought that, the song People would be the, I mean, it was a very popular song. It would be the
it
main
was a big hit.
But it was all, but you write about Don't Rain on My Parade and other songs as being the showstoppers.
Well, but I write about Don't Rain on My Parade and People. And People almost didn't get into the show. People, because the director at the time, which is Bob Fosse, told Julie Stein, the composer, Fanny Brice didn't need People. She had people all over the place. She had her family, friends, you know, show people. And it doesn't make sense, Julie. And Julie said, well, you know why that song should be in the show? And Fosse said, no, tell me why. And he said, because it's going to be an effing hit on the hit parade.
Well, and
he was right.
He was right about that,
yeah.
Certainly. You think about these giants and in musical theater. I mean, the two names that come immediately to mind are women, Barbara Streisand and Ethel Merman.
Right.
I mean, who are the men in that category, I mean, who have been lionized, deserve to be canonized?
Yeah, that's a very good question. There are a lot of one-show guys like Robert Preston or Richard Kiley and Man of La Mancha. Well, John Raitt, I guess, would come to mind. He was in Oklahoma. He was in Pajama Game. He was in
Gordon McRae, maybe?
Carousel.
who was also in Oklahoma.
McRae was the movie guy, though.
Yeah, that's right. He was not.
John Raitt did Carousel. He did a lot of. He was kind of the leading virile leading man of the time.
Terry Nachman's book again, and it is out and available. I'm looking at it right in front. I'm going to give you the full title: "Showstoppers: The Surprising Backstage Stories of Broadway's Most Remarkable Songs." With a really fun cover. It includes Robert Preston on the cover. By the way, I mentioned 76 trombones. I didn't realize that Meredith Wilson had actually played with John Sousa. You learn things like that from your book, which are really...
Well, thank you. Yes, you do. He was 19. He played with Sousa.
Well, you know what we're going to do? We're going to go out with "Some Enchanted Evening" from South Pacific. Bring it up.
Night after night, as strange as it seems, the sound of laughter.
Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Lauberg. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our entertainment engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, and our general manager and executive producer is Joanne Wallace. Thank you for listening. I'm Michael Krasny.
Wise men never try. Some enchanted evening. When you
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.